All right. Welcome to the Questionable Behavior Podcast. Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @_QBPC and rate us 5 stars on all audio platforms. Subscribe to our YouTube, everything. Google us. We got a special episode out from Florida, Miami, Florida. We got Teflon, the producer, over here. If you haven't heard of him, you've definitely heard his tracks. That's 100%. So first off, I want to start off with why Teflon? I know you got your name from Swizz and Ice Pick, but how'd that name come about?
I think we were in Sony studio one night, and Ice Pick, unfortunately, he's no longer with us. He passed away.
Rest in peace.
But he was an A&R for Rough Riders, and a dear close friend to me, and Swizz as well, and the whole hip-hop community. So as I was saying, we was in Sony Studios one night. I think I was working on the Nutty Professor soundtrack, I believe. And at that time, my career started to, like, you know, progress a lot more. So he was like, listen, you know, you can't use your regular name. You're starting to, you know what I'm saying? You're starting to
Get some big. Moves. Yeah, yeah, you gotta find a producer
now.
Name.
So he's like, you know, your name is Sheldon. We can't call you Sheldon, like, you know what I'm saying? So you're gonna have to get a name. So I was just like, all right.
You gotta diss you and hype you up at the same time.
Yeah. So I was just like, all right. And, you know, these guys are just straight comedians. So I was just like, let me see what they're gonna come up with. So Swizz happened to be in the room, and I think Ice Pick has said, like, Cheddar Beats or some shit like that. And I'm like, I didn't really want to be a knockoff of Swizz. Swizz was already Swizz Beats, and then he started with the Cheddar Beats, and I was like, nah. And then they went through like 50 other names, and Swizz said Teflon, and everybody was like, yeah, that sounds hot. And I was just like, all right.
Ran with it since then.
I was just like, all right, cool. Let's do it.
So how did you get into working for the Nutty Professor? And you've actually produced for other movies too, 51st Dates, Finding Forrester.
Yeah.
So how did you get that link, and how did you start working for those movies?
Nutty Professor, I believe, was Kevin Lyles. My CEO at the time, Darren Dean, came to me and was like, listen, they're doing a soundtrack. They need some music, yada, yada, yada. And I was in the studio, and Kevin Lyles was like, yo, you got anything for this? It's Eddie Murphy, Janet Jackson. And I was just like, yo, let's do it. And we did it.
Yeah. So was that like a moment in your career where you're like, all right, things are really taking off, where you saw yourself doing much bigger things?
Yeah, it was kind of surreal at the time, because it was just like, you know, first of all, to be doing music at that time with the people I was doing music with was just like crazy. And then a big movie that starred with Janet Jackson and Eddie Murphy, I was just blown away.
So during that time, you said you were working, I guess at that time you were working with Eve.
Yeah.
And is that how you got your Grammy?
No. The Grammy actually came recently. Like, the Grammy was with Sting and Shaggy.
Oh, which Sting and Shaggy was the Grammy.
Year,
but she had won a Grammy from that album, too, that you
produced. I don't know if the album was nominated or the single.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe the single. I keep forgetting. But I think the single was with Gwen Stefani and Dr. Dre.
Yeah. So recently, the Shaggy, I mean, that video is already hitting over 10 million views on YouTube with Shaggy and Sting. How is it working with... 16 already?
16 million, yeah.
Yeah. So how is it working with... You've worked with Shaggy before. In 2012, you did The Rise that launched in Europe.
Yeah.
But how is it working with, you know, two legendary people, basically two very experienced artists like that? Is it much easier working with people like that, or...?
My relationship with Shaggy started, I think, back in 2010. I was just in New York one day, and a friend of mine was like, listen, come out to Long Island. I'd like you to meet Shaggy. I went out there, and, like, as soon as we met, the first day, that night, we had went out to a club, and, you know, he was like, look, I'm building a house out in Miami in Coconut Grove. I think I'm going to build a studio there, and let's rock. So when I left New York, I came back down to Miami, and he hit me up one day and was like, come to the crib, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward, you know, we tried a bunch of songs, tracks, you know what I mean? And we tried to push out stuff, and, you know, we had some success with things. And then over the the course of time, our relationship just got stronger and stronger. And to speed up recently, how we got on the project with Sting, Shaggy normally does a fundraiser for this children's hospital in Jamaica called Bustamante Children's mm-hmm. Hospital. And miraculously, he got Sting to come out and perform for free. Wow. And during that whole time, he was like, listen, we're going to do an album, yada, yada. Like, let's do it. And after that, it was done.
Yeah, and the track that you produced seems to be, like, one of the most popular in the album also. So,
yeah, Gotta Get Back My Baby was the second single off the album, which is the 44876 album. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, also working with Sting, I didn't really get to work with him that much. I've been in a few sessions with him. Mm-hmm. But during the time that I was, you know, I got to work with him, he's like, he's just an amazing dude. He's very humble, very quiet, very, you know, just very down to earth. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. I mean, it's just amazing to work with somebody that has 17 Grammys.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And the track record that he has is just like, that's just like a living, walking
guy.
Yeah,
he's a legend. Living legend. So. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at this point of your career, you got your Grammy. Is there still, like, artists that, you know, you'd love to work with or you'd look forward to hopefully linking up with? Or is it just kind of, you know, you're just catching whatever is coming your way?
Yeah, there's a lot of artists that I love to work with. You know, my what I love to do is really, like, a lot of music-orientated progression with chords and mm-hmm. a lot of music. So a lot of the pop stuff I would love to work with, like, I love to work with, like, Charlie Puth and Beyonce and, mm-hmm. and Maroon 5 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And as far as the hip-hop now, you know, there's a lot of new talent that's out now, you know what I mean, that I would yeah. love. Yeah.
Who do you like, one of the younger kids?
Who are you following? The most controversial right now, 6ix9ine, he's like, you know, I just think I'll just be dying laughing in the studio with him just because his personality. I'd love to work with him.
Even after all this?
Yeah, even after, like, I don't really care about none of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really faze me at all, but, you know.
Doesn't affect you personally. So
No. I'm for the music, the actual right. love of the music and the business.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of cats, man. Roddy Ricch is cool. Yeah. Little Baby is mm-hmm. is dope. You know, I love 2 Chainz. Mm. So, you know, if I get opportunity, you know, I'm doing it.
Right. So, like, you've worked with a lot of different types of music. You produced for Shakira. You did the Eve song. How do you differentiate yourself and do so many different things? Like, so many different ranges of music.
Well, to be honest, when I first started making tracks, I started doing reggae. Mm. Dancehall was like the first genre that I've worked on because my family is Jamaican.
Right.
So being that I was doing reggae, you know, I then kind of switched from reggae to R&B, which I've learned how to play and mm-hmm. taught myself how to, you know, play chords and chord progression. So as you move from genre to genre, you start getting more musical in the sense that, you know, you know how to do all these different elements. So, and that's how I kind of, my style is like, kind of like this. Like, even in the Who's That Girl for Eve, you'll hear in the beginning, like, the horns, the trumpets, mm-hmm. and it has a little Latin flair to it.
Which I got
to
thank you for that, because usually once that song used to hit in the club, you know, I'm getting a number at that point.
Yeah, get the party started. Yeah. But, you know, that's just really my style, man, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, so has it been, like, over time that you just kind of, like, try different things or you learn more? Like, how do you study music in general, or was that something that just came later on?
It's kind of a mix of both. I love to listen to jazz. I incorporate a lot of my ideas from jazz. Like, again, I love to listen to reggae. Mm-hmm. And then as far as, like, software that I use, I just stay there. I tweak the sounds. I go through millions and millions of sounds, like, literally every day. Mm. I edit them. You know, I'm not a producer that just picks something just because it's in the library and then I'll use it. Yeah. I have to make it, like, a unique sound for me to catch the frequency that I'm looking for.
Yeah. Do you Do you sample at all? Do you like mix with older sounds? You know, like from back in the day, like you said with jazz. Do you take like some of the horns and kind of distort it and make it your own?
I generally try not to, because when you sample, you know, you really need a copyright and you need a sample clearance, and that's less money for me. You know what I'm saying? So, like for instance, like if you know you get a publishing check and you sample. When you can get a check for 80 grand, you might get a check for 15 grand because you used the sample.
Right.
And most of the money is going to the original copyright.
Hmm. So now that we're talking about business, how long did it take you before you really had that mindset for business? You know, because I'm sure, you know, in the beginning, you're kind of really focused on the creative side, not really focusing on how the money's going to come in and everything. So when was it when you had to like more focus on the business side, the money side and all that?
Well, fortunately for me, I've had like great friends throughout the like my career. Mm-hmm. And at a young age when I was started, I had like older peers that would tell me, listen, you know what I mean? Make sure, you know, you have your publishing company set up. Make sure you have an LLC or incorporation set up, and make sure, you know, your taxes are straight. So kind of really from a young age. And then, you know, I've been working since I was like maybe 13. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I've worked, you know, at CVS, I worked on a golf course, I worked at this. So the money aspect was always important to me, and I always wanted to make sure that I'm diligent with my money.
Right. Do you see, like, normally I give an example to artists about like followers and Instagram and all that, how it's more important who's following you than how many followers. And the biggest example I think is producers, because usually producers, their name is not, you know, in the millions of followers or whatever, but the people that follow them is people that are genuinely going to make you money and, you know, genuine connection that you can work with.
Right.
So how do you think like social media has changed the focus of like younger artists?
And the artist standpoint, social media has helped a lot, because now you can get exposed, mm-hmm. you know, you can get recognized.
Right.
You know, sometimes on my story, you know, I'll post a story and then I'll go through the story and scroll up and you can see who watched your story, and I'm seeing like 20 blue checks. Like the other night I seen Dennis Rodman like look at my story. I was like, oh shit. And I'm just like,
so then a lot more people get to see you.
Yeah. Whatever. So it does help a lot. On the flip side, it can be a distraction as well. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like again, when I first started, there was no social media. Right. So there wasn't a lot of things. All you had to really do is focus on your music.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're sitting by the phone every day, constantly, like, taking 5 minutes, every 5 minutes scrolling to see what's on IG,
mm-hmm.
you know, that takes away from your lack of creativity.
I also do feel that, like, sometimes people don't focus on a real-life connection. So it's like you're focused on this image that you're portraying,
right.
which is not, like, 100% real.
Right.
And, you know, there's no substance to it. You know, you show up to, you know, people with 100,000 followers and then nobody's showing up to a show, for example, you know?
Right.
So What do you think about like that real life connection? Do you think like younger artists lack that, or in regards to producers, have you seen it personally?
To be honest, it's an individual thing, because you know, you have certain artists that really have a star quality about them.
Mm-hmm.
Like for instance, if they have a concert or a show, you know, some artists, younger artists, they have like crowd control, like 6ix9ine, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, when he gets on stage, he knows exactly how to run out, the timing to run out, the movements to do. You know, he gets the interactive response with the crowd. And certain artists, they go out and walk on stage and it's just like dead, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it depends really on the individual.
Mm. So we were talking earlier about, you know, how much easier it is to produce now than when you first started.
Right.
So, you know, with all these sample packs and, you know, all these sounds that people can just kind of copy paste into beats, what do you think is something that you would say to younger producers to focus on musically?
Yeah, like I was telling you earlier, I had this conversation with my brother last night, and, you know, I'm more from the older generation, so it's like I don't want to sound like a hater to the younger generation, the younger producers coming up. But I would say, you know, focus a lot on your artistry and your talent. You know what I mean? Because it's easy, like I said, to go. You can spend $99 on a sample pack right now. It'll come with 100 or 200 presets of trap drums, It would come with 90s hip hop drums. There's drums, and the rhythmic patterns are already made for you. So you have to just select which pattern you want, and then select the bass line, select the horn section. So, but at the end of the day,
touch with like the instrument and actually
Me personally, you know, I come from the era of really being instrumented. I don't even know if that's a word, instrumentative, but instrumental in your creation and your production. So me, I still spend time on the keys. You know, I'm always changing keyboards. Like, this is a brand new keyboard. Like, it's a Roley. Like, it's different, but it has some technology. Oh,
it's kind of like a B-pad keyboard, huh?
It has a fundamental to play like a string, like a guitar. Okay. So you can bend. Okay. I can bend the sound like a string. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's cool to do stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I still know how to play.
Right. You still know how to play the piano. You still don't. So you would say to younger producers, focus on your instruments. Yeah. Actually learn music.
Learn music.
This way, you'll broaden what you can do.
Yeah, because it'll separate you from a lot of other people, you know, that's doing the same thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Let me just stop this. So, we were talking about earlier your Jamaican heritage. Right. And recently, you worked on the Jamaican Independence song with Damian Marley. And so, how big is that for you as, you know, from your descendant and your culture?
It was real big. It was the 50th anniversary of independence for Jamaica. And, you know, you had Damian Marley, you had Shaggy, you had, it was like 10 different artists. I can't remember, but we had Movado, but it didn't work out where he got to be on the record. But I had so many legends on one record. Mm-hmm. And being from a place that, you know, my family's from, it was legendary to me.
So that's like, I'm Albanian, and I know how our culture is and how close-knit we are.
Right.
So if I got to do something like that, it'd be like...
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's huge, especially for the family and for everything.
And to have that on my credentials is just, for me, it was just monumental.
Mm-hmm. So at this point in your career, you know, you have multiple platinums, multiple gold albums, a Grammy. Like, what more are you striving, and how do you keep pushing yourself forward? Because a lot of people, you know, you reach a certain level of success and you get content.
Right.
So how do you keep yourself moving forward to where you're still achieving bigger and bigger things?
Really, is at the end of the day, is the passion and the love that you have for the music. Right now, you know, I love making tracks. I love producing. More importantly, I would love to, like, you know, probably be at an executive level where I could put out artists and, you know, get to sign artists and get to run labels and build companies and just give, you know, creatives a chance to grow and blossom.
So that's the next big step for you. You want to kind of create a bigger platform almost. Would you like to be like getting into management and managing artists? Is that something that like is interesting to you or no?
The management side, not really. I mean, if there was an opportunity that arose and it was a good situation, yeah. But managing artists is basically like babysitting. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to make sure they get up and catch a flight and make sure they eat and make sure they have this. And they're very, you know, they're very needy at times. So it's like, you know, I'm needy. I need somebody to manage me and freaking make up my bed and freaking spoon feed me. You know what I mean? So I don't know about the management part, but as far as like the executive part, I definitely could see myself doing more of that.
So when you work with certain artists, do you ever like how is that vibe in the studio? Are you pushing them to do a different sound? When you hear something, are you telling them right away, hey, try this, try that? You know, do you kind of mold them into a sound that you're trying to get, or how does that creative process work with you?
It really depends on the artist. Certain artists, you know, they know what they want, when they want it. They know how, you know what I mean? Ironically, like, a lot of the major artists, like, for example, one time I got to work with LL Cool J, and he was just like, he kept expressing, like, Tef, tell me how you want me to sound. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, coach me through it. Like, he kept on reiterating that, and I was just like, I was just so starstruck that I was like in the studio with this guy, and he's just like telling me to tell him what to do. So I was just like, do this ad lib like this and put this like that. And so, you know what I mean? It boils down to the artist, mm-hmm. but
what do you prefer?
Me, I prefer giving them an instruction, because when I give them the track, I already know the melody and everything, the concept, you know, mm-hmm. the layout, because I've made the track.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I know how the flow should be to the what I played.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like, you know, to kind of instruct them on how to go about the song.
Mm.
But sometimes, you know, they're just like, look, I know I wrote this, I got it, you know, and I'll just back up and just be easy.
So typical question is, what's the next move for you? You know, everybody wants to know what's next. Something comes out, everybody's like, all right, what's next? You know, especially nowadays with all the streaming service and everything, you know, within a week, everybody's like, all right, now what?
The next thing is pretty much like film. Movies. I just got an opportunity. I just got an email actually to do a major animation, a Disney animation scoring.
That's a nice exclusive for the question behavior.
Yeah. I can't really say which movie it is, but it's a major animation movie from Disney, which I'm familiar with scoring because I did it for Sprite, I did it for Red Bull in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on the original Shatta, the Jamaican movie with Wyclef. That scoring didn't get to come out because that actual film just it just tanked the original version, and it got into a whole bunch of issues with the film. But I would like to do more of that stuff. You know, video games.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? EA Sports, you know, designing sounds and different things like that nature.
How about, since you're working in movies, how about, aiming for an Oscar? Is that something that you ever thought about?
Listen, I got the Grammy already. You know, we can get the Oscar. Nice. You know, you can get an Emmy. I mean, you can just, let's keep it going. Like, whatever award that's out there, you know, I love awards, you know what I mean?
Where's your trophy case? Where's all the plaques, the albums, the Grammy?
Unfortunately, like I told you, I just started building this room.
Yeah.
And a lot of my stuff I have to put up.
You know what I mean? So next time we're here, if we're going to see everything.
Yeah. Next time I'll have it ready and we can show off all the plaques.
I'll rub the Grammy for good luck.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, everybody. That was our interview with Tef the Producer. Google him. That's it.
That's
up, everything will show up. Tef the Producer.
That's what's up.
All right. Thank you. First of all, shout out to Junior. Always hooking it up for the Question Will Be Able podcast. Sir. Shout out to Art Related. You're going to hear some big news coming soon with the both of us. So take care, everybody.
Peace.
Subscribe. All that shit.